China has threatened to retaliate against President Trump's surprise decision to impose more tariffs on Chinese goods, saying Beijing would never give in to blackmail or intimidation. Mr. Trump has accused China of failing to keep its promises after the latest trade talks. Karishma Vaswani reports.
China has reacted strongly to President Trump's latest tariff announcement, saying that Beijing doesn't want a trade war, but isn't afraid of fighting one. President Trump says he'll raise tariffs on $300 billion worth of Chinese goods from September the 1st, and says that China is suffering because of his trade tactics. But Beijing isn't the only one that's hurting. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce says American businesses and consumers will pay the price of the tariffs, which this time target household items such as smartphones, computers and clothes.
South Korea and Japan are placing further trade restrictions on each other as their bitter dispute continues to escalate. Seoul announced plans to remove Tokyo from its list of trusted trade partners hours after Japan did the same. South Korea's President Moon Jae-in described Tokyo's actions as very reckless. Customs officials in Germany have announced the country's biggest ever seizure of cocaine. Its street value is estimated at more than $1 billion. Jenny Hill is in Berlin.
The shipping container, which was on its way to Antwerp from Uruguay, was supposed to contain soybeans. Instead, suspicious customs officers in Hamburg cracked it open and found the largest hoard of cocaine ever seized in Germany, packed into more than 200 sports bags. The German authorities kept the find a secret at first and destroyed the cocaine. 2 weeks later, they're keen to publicise their work, saying that the discovery reflects their growing ability to interrupt international drug smuggling. But they also warn that the size of the stash indicates that South American drugs cartels are growing bolder.
You're listening to the latest world news from the BBC. Al-Qaeda militants in Yemen are reported to have attacked an army base in the south of the country, killing at least 19 soldiers. It comes a day after security forces in Aden, the main city in southern Yemen, were hit by separate attacks by Houthi rebels and the Islamic State group, in which at least 49 people, many of them newly trained police cadets, were killed. Thousands of civil servants in Hong Kong have rallied in support of pro-democracy demonstrators, defying an order from their bosses. The government had told them they were expected to remain totally loyal to the territory's leader, Carrie Lam. But large numbers crowded into a public park near government offices. Stephen McDonnell is in Hong Kong.
Many thousands of civil servants have disobeyed this instruction from the government not to participate in this rally. They have ignored that in big numbers. Now, it may well be tested in the courts as to whether or not somebody in their free time is entitled to attend a rally, but certainly those warnings from the government haven't worked, and people have come out, they've followed the airline industry, the finance sector, in joining the students, calling for democratic reforms here.
A powerful earthquake has struck off the coast of the Indonesian island of Sumatra with a magnitude of 6.9. Tremors were felt in many cities, including the capital, Jakarta. There are no reports of damage or casualties. Officials had initially warned that the quake had the potential to generate a tsunami. A French football official will referee the UEFA Super Cup final, becoming the first woman to take charge of a major men's European game. Stéphanie Frappard will lead a team mostly made up of female officials as the Champions League winners, Liverpool, face the Europa League holders, Chelsea, on the 14th of August in Istanbul. She also refereed the FIFA Women's World Cup final. BBC World Service News.
And welcome to The Morning Magazine, your front range morning news program here on Community Radio KGNU. It's Friday, August 2nd. Thanks for tuning in. I'm your host, Hanalee Myers. Coming up on today's Morning Magazine, it is the first Friday of the month, and that means we have another edition of the Nature Almanac for you. This morning, we join our KGNU naturalists at sunrise at Longmont's Jim Ham Park to observe a marsh wren family hiding in the cattails, including some fledglings that still have their little yellow baby lips. As we've been reporting all week, yesterday, the first field hearing of the U.S. House Special Committee on the Climate Crisis took place in Boulder. We'll hear from some of the elected officials who testified in front of the committee, and we'll hear from the activists who rallied outside beforehand, demanding immediate action on the climate crisis. At 8:30, we'll go to connections. Last November, voters made Colorado the first state in the nation to abolish slavery and involuntary servitude as punishment for a crime. This morning, KGNU's Kathy Partridge will discuss Colorado's amendment to abolish slavery with guest Camu Allen, who was lead organizer for Abolish Slavery Colorado, the group behind the state amendment called Amendment A. As always, on connections coming up at 8:30, your calls will be welcome. But first, at 7 minutes past 8 o'clock, it's time for your local headlines. Here's Steve Miller.
On Wednesday, the Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission approved the first set of industry rules under a new law that makes protecting public health and the environment the state's top priority. Colorado Politics reports that this will put in place tougher requirements for forced pooling, a practice that allows an energy company to extract oil and gas owned by multiple parties and then distribute the profits among them. It also forces the impacts of drilling, like toxic air emissions, risk of water pollution, and other environmental impacts related to the drilling onto the landowners. The commission also approved a provision that allows administrative law judges and hearing officials to handle some decisions so the commissioners can focus on writing the new rules. The public comment period before the votes brought on a heated exchange between supporters and opponents of oil and gas drilling. A group that wants to overturn the recently enacted National Popular Vote law in Colorado turned in signatures to the Secretary of State's office on Thursday in an effort to get on the ballot. Lily Fine has more.
Coloradans Vote is the group that wants to ask voters to repeal a new law that would pledge the state's presidential electoral votes to the winner of the national popular vote. The Denver Post reports that 15 states and the District of Columbia have joined the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact, which says each state promises to give their electoral college votes to the winner of the national popular vote no matter who won in each state. Those states and the District of Columbia account for a total of 196 electoral votes. That's less than the 270 votes needed to elect a president. The National Popular Vote Compact would not actually go into effect until that 270 vote threshold is cleared. Since state legislators approved the law in this year's session, opponents have vowed to overturn it. The group behind the ballot initiative include a Mesa County Commissioner and the Mayor of Monument. The Secretary of State's office has until August 30th to validate the signatures for it to appear on the 2020 ballot. For KGNU, I'm Lily Fine.
On the Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, that will take about a year in order to write up the provisions for the new rules. A new collaboration between the Douglas County School District and Kaiser Permanente, the state's largest nonprofit health plan, will bring more mental health resources and support systems to the Douglas County schools. The Denver Post reported that following the STEM school Highlands Ranch shooting in May, Kaiser provided support and care to the schools. Douglas County Schools, along with five other school districts in the state, are part of the Thriving Schools Mental Health Group, which started in 2017. This provides mental health and wellness training to teach staff how to work with traumatized students who have experienced things like the STEM school Highlands Ranch shooting. The idea is for the staff to learn how to use trauma-sensitive approaches in classrooms. The Douglas County Schools will also access online mental health resources from Alliance for a Healthier Generation. And in today's weather and the weekend, today mostly sunny with a slight chance of thunderstorms after 2 p.m., high in the upper 80s. Tonight, a low of 60. Saturday and Sunday, mostly sunny skies with 20 to 30% chance of thunderstorms, high in the upper 90s. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
It's August. What's happening in the natural world? Here are Boulder naturalists, Scott Sievers and Ruth Carroll Cushman.
There's a big flock of blackbirds. Here they come overhead.
Red-winged blackbirds.
And a few yellow-headed blackbirds.
Oh, and the sun is just now coming up. Beautiful gold and rose colors.
We're here at sunrise at Jim Ham Park. A lot of dragonflies hopping and bopping around here.
There's a bullfrog. Oh, and look on the tree.
There's at least three cormorants sitting on the edge of the cottonwoods over the pond.
They've got long necks and a crook. They hold their wings out when they're drying them off. Look like they're hanging themselves up to dry.
Jim Ham Park. It's a very wild pond owned by the city of Longmont. It's got marsh and willows and big cottonwoods.
It's just this tiny, tiny little area bounded by noisy streets. Out to the west are so beautiful from Jim Ham because we're looking now at Long's Peak and Meeker.
We're hearing marsh wrens. Marsh wrens are wren-shaped, a longish tail that's cocked up at the end. They have pretty strong feet and they hop around the vegetation quickly and jump back down. They're actually a very colorful wren if we ever can get a look at them, but they sulk back in the reeds.
It's really secretive. In contrast to house wrens, which usually are quite easy to see.
This is a good time, though, at sunrise to come and look for them because they're often up at the top of the reeds. The marsh wrens are still going crazy. They sound like a scatico jazz singer. Kind of sound like a rapid-fire machine gun. Marsh wrens like to depredate other birds' nests by piercing their eggs. Marsh wrens are not looked upon favorably by blackbirds.
I didn't know that, Scott, about the marsh wrens. You think of wrens as being relatively benign little birds.
There's a wren hopping where the cattails are still dead. He's singing over here, Carol.
If you cup your ears, it makes them into amplifiers so you can hear a little better, which is what I'm doing right now.
Has it moved up into the cottonwood here? Yes.
Flirting its tail up and down.
It's a little baby wren. I can still see a little bit of the flange on the mouth. The flange is usually yellowish. All baby birds have large beaks that say feed me when they open it. And the flange sort of look like lips that go way back under the eye. He's following mom around. It's a little family group of three or four wrens following mom through the bottom of this cottonwood. If you want to see a great variety of different species during August and into fall, they all use this marsh to roost together and be protected from predators. To reach Jim Ham Park, come east on Highway 119 from the city of Longmont and turn north on County Line Road and take it all the way up to 17th Avenue. Just past 17th, the park is on the left.
Scott Sievers and Ruth Carol Cushman are friends and Boulder naturalists.
A special U.S. House Committee on the Climate Crisis held its first field hearing outside the Capitol on Thursday at CU Boulder. In a few minutes, we'll hear some local elected officials who testified. But first, Sarah Dugleish brings us this report on a rally that took place ahead of the hearing.
Yes, there was a day this country needed fossil fuels to build a nation known the world around. Now the time has come to once again be leading. This is how to lead. We leave it in the ground. Come on.
Early Thursday morning, a climate crisis rally was held outside the Wolf Law Building at the University of Colorado Boulder, preceding the U.S. House Select Committee on the Climate Crisis hearing. Various environmental advocacy and anti-fracking organizations were joined by community members to sing and share ideas before the hearing. Their message to the committee and to other politicians was clear.
Right now we're on track for about 3 degrees Celsius temperature rise. That is a planet that we don't want to live on, that we don't want our kids to have to live on. And so I think it's absolutely urgent that our leaders, from the local to the state to the federal level, start to be real and speak with integrity and let their actions follow. Because at this point in history, we can't continue with all of the above. We can't continue with bringing on fossil fuels and switching to a renewable energy future. We have to go 100% to renewable energy and do a moonshot for switching our economy off fossil fuels to renewable energy, which takes some serious leadership. We need leaders with courage and integrity who are willing to say, it's time to start leaving fossil fuels in the ground. It's time for a ban on fracking. No new fossil fuels.
The University of Colorado was chosen for the first field hearing of the Special Congressional Committee because of its leadership in climate change research. Attendees and speakers at the rally focused on how Colorado is affected by fracking and climate change.
If you look around, you can see all of these different organizations gathering together are emblematic of what Colorado is supposed to represent. We preach environmentalism and conservation, and then we frack and exploit frontline communities and start polluting our air, and we turn a blind eye and don't talk about it.
Speakers also talked about how the crisis would affect future generations. One mom, Leora Franco, brought her four children to the event for this reason.
Unfortunately, our political system is completely broken. Our only chance is to rise up. And our only chance is to get people to understand there's an emergency, there's a climate emergency. The world is burning, there are floods, there's extreme drought, there's extreme temperatures. People are dying around the world. Part of the migration crisis is because of climate change. And our politicians are very slow and very beholden to donors. So unfortunately, I have to come here with my 9-year-old and my other kids to try to make a point because nobody's hearing us.
Her children had their own reasons for attending.
We're at the edge of a cliff, I think, when it comes to environmental action that we have to take and the climate crisis. And so we're coming here to support stopping the fossil fuel development as well as just support for renewable energy and zero net emissions.
Yeah, we're out of time before the world reaches a point where there's no turning back. So we're here to support especially a ban on fracking, but also switching to renewable energy, clean energy.
Yeah. We won't have a future with climate change because all of us will pretty much, like, die in the world will die. We need to do something now. Think about the planet and the future.
They say their main hope for the Select Committee on the Climate Crisis is that it brings about real change.
I'm hoping to see actual change, not just talk, not just political jargon, but to actually see people coming forward to make a difference.
There should be a carbon tax, and I don't hear any talk of that.
And an immediate ban on fracking.
Their sentiment was shared by all those at the rally.
All right, one more time so Jared Polis can hear us. We're gonna rise up till it's one. We're gonna rise up till it's one.
For KGNU, I'm Sarah Dalglish.
The power's come down. Several local elected officials addressed the committee, including the mayors of Boulder and Fort Collins, as well as the governor of Colorado. Maeve Conran has more.
Governor Jared Polis told committee members about his administration's goal to transition the state to 100% renewable energy by 2040. Polis says that Colorado is already seeing the effects of climate change with shrinking water supplies and more intense natural disasters.
In Colorado, we know this hotter, more erratic, drier future isn't some dystopian vision. It's impacting us right now. It's impacting our dwindling water supply, impacting our farming and ranching communities, our outdoor recreation industry, our wildlife and ecological diversity.
When asked by committee members about transitioning to green energy and the costs that could be placed on consumers, Governor Polis called for more innovative ways to price energy.
Clean energy is less expensive today. The question is, how do you account for the stranded assets in costly coal and other forms of non-renewable energy? So in Colorado, we move forward with now, under new legislation, allowing for securitization of stranded assets. So effectively, we can borrow against a future savings stream to accelerate the retirement of coal assets today and to help fund a just transition for workers who work in coal-fired plants and recognize savings for ratepayers sooner rather than later.
Jonah Goose, who represents Colorado's 2nd Congressional District, is the only representative from the Rocky Mountain West serving on the committee. However, Diana DeGette was invited to participate on Thursday. As she represents Colorado's 1st Congressional District, she asked Boulder Mayor Suzanne Jones about the city's moratorium on fracking.
Mayor Jones, I know that the city of Boulder recently extended its fracking moratorium. I'm wondering if you can talk about the city, the municipality's reasons for this moratorium and what it's done for your local economy here, pro or con.
Thank you, Congresswoman DeGette. We have a lot of concerns in our community with fracking from two angles. One is, as Congressman Neguse eloquently stated, there's a lot of public health impacts that come from oil and gas drilling and exploration. And I'll just note that Boulder County Oil and Gas Inspector did a study to look at leaks from oil and gas production and found a 65% leak rate, which prompted the industry, to their credit, to go and do a big push to fix those leaks. But 2 years later, went back to see how we're doing, and it's 45% leak rate because new leaks happen. And I guess my point is there are a lot of air pollutants, both methane, which deals with climate, and VOCs, which address public health, that come from oil and gas production. And it's a concern of our community. We are downwind. The other side of that is our economy is very much based on a high quality of life. Our wonderful vistas, our wonderful outdoors, being able to recreate and breathe clean air. And a lot of companies are attracted to bring their companies here because of that. So we have a very robust economy, and fracking is at odds with the basis of that.
So, you know, one thing, Colorado has actually passed some of the most stringent laws around fracking in the last few years, but yet you're saying this leaking and some of these other issues, it still occurs even despite the strong laws and, frankly, the commitment of most of our oil and gas companies here in Colorado to complying with those laws.
Yes. The methane rules that were passed were a great step forward. We appreciate industries agreeing to some of that. However, yes, the leaks continue, and we know how much more potent methane is than CO2. And we know that when leaks rate get in the 10% range, that the benefits of natural gas as compared to coal, are drastically reduced.
So let me ask you this. Would it be important for all of these laws, the methane, the CO2, the Safe Drinking Water Act, it's important to have federal legislation that sets some kind of minimum standards. Wouldn't that be accurate?
Absolutely.
Okay. I just have one sort of last question for both of our mayors, because in the light of Congress's unfortunate inaction on climate change issues the last few years, which we hope to change with all due expediency, local and state governments really have stepped in. And your testimony today is perfect evidence of how that's happened. But I'm wondering if you can tell me whether, in your view, local and state governments can do it without some kind of strong national standards.
Do you want to go first?
I'll just, I think we have to work in partnership with federal, state, and local governments. I represent my community, and we're committed, and we're committed in a way that we keep our heads down and keep working on what works for our community.
And you do it without us, though?
No,
that's where it doesn't stop at our local boundaries, and that's where working together, and that's where I think there's a state and federal participation as well.
I would just add, we absolutely need your help, please. We have a window of time that's shrinking if we're going to avoid the worst impacts of climate change. And I'll just note, local municipalities cannot afford the extreme weather events that we are predicted to see, right? So we definitely need national action, and I'll note that putting a price on carbon at the national level would be one of the most useful things you could do, because it could drive all the markets, the technology, the innovation in all of our communities.
Chair of the committee, Representative Kathy Castor from Florida, asked Boulder Mayor Suzanne Jones and Fort Collins Mayor Wade Troxell about how to make sure a transition to cleaner energy would be equitable for all.
There's already too much inequity across this country. And I'd like to ask you and Mayor Troxell as well, you all have the finger on the pulse of your communities. What recommendations do you have for us at the national level as we develop a national climate action plan that can be impactful to ensure that as we deploy certain resources, make certain investments, that we are lifting people that we are treating people equally. We're not leaving anyone behind.
Well, thank you, Chair, for that question. We are lucky to have a partnership with the Just Transition Collaborative here at CU to help wrestle with this very issue. And several recommendations came out of that work that I would pass on to you. One is, I think as we embark on this huge systemic change and transition, is to make sure that underrepresented communities are at the table as part of the decision-making process and their voices are heard. Another is to make sure that the jobs, the solar energy jobs, the energy efficiency in households jobs, are going to those communities, to those workforces that low-income workers that can be trained and be a part of the solution, and so that they have access to that economic growth. And then I'd also say that we want to make sure that we are providing the solutions, whether it is solar on your roof or whatnot, make sure that everybody has access to that. And so for one example that we have here in Boulder is we have a low-income solar grants program to try to do just that, so that everyone is included in the solution and the benefits of it.
Very good. And I'd just like to add, in Fort Collins, a priority of our council is equity and inclusion. So we look at everything that we do through that lens for our entire community. And so we have a community for all. And with that, we look at investment in our infrastructure as key, because it does benefit all in our community. And finally, an important part of our community is engagement, and engagement really meeting people where they are, not coming to city council on a Tuesday night at 6 o'clock, but it's really engaging everyone where they are. And so we work closely. I would state one program in particular, working with the Center for Public Engagement at Colorado State University, and it really does bring together people. It's not the loudest people in the room, it's not the smartest people in the room, but it's everybody in the room to have a conversation and to really get to better solutions.
And that was Wade Troxell, mayor of Fort Collins. We also heard from Boulder Mayor Suzanne Jones and Colorado Governor Jared Polis, some of the speakers who testified yesterday in front of the U.S. House Select Committee on the Climate Crisis. You can find more of our coverage on this online at news.kgnu.org. That does it for The Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Hannah Lee Myers.